He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
It is indeed. Jay is still in, I believe, overseas.
Really?
Well, if he's back here, I haven't seen any hide nor hair of him. I got an email from him about
General Motors'
new electric vehicle that's going to go on into production in China, not necessarily be available in the U.S., some comments that aren't relevant to our show today.
Except that I did answer back, and this is relevant. I was really stunned watching football yesterday to see a very enthusiastic, designed for millennials, strictly romantic and everything, ad for the Toyota Corolla Hybrid.
Well, let me tell you something. The Toyota Corolla Hybrid is little known. You may have seen the first ad for it. I'm sure there's been some before that, but I haven't seen any on any of the shows. I've been looking for the hybrid. I also haven't seen any ads in Toyota's end-of-the-year sales promotions for the Toyota RAV Hybrid, which has been out for 2 years or 3 years and is a sleeper in the SUV world for anybody who can afford a 30-plus or minus $1,000 RAV4 model, because the hybrid is available in that price range if you don't get all the options that a lot of people want when they go and seek it. And it's not packed with a lot of options to make it be necessarily a whole lot higher than what might be conceived to be an affordable RAV hybrid. RAV hybrids or RAV4s are really popular vehicles in the Toyota lineup and in the SUV lineup. Short of the CR-V, Honda, which is also extremely popular, does not have a hybrid version available. These hybrids that are now migrating downward from the Sonatas and the Fusions and the Avalons and the higher-priced range cars are real sleepers for people who can afford the price level at which these cars are going to be at, which is going to be lower than the Toyota Camrys and the Hyundai Sonatas, and therefore, in my take, affordable. I recommended about 3 months ago to the father of a friend of a friend of mine with whom we were having lunch, and he was talking to me when he learned I was in the car knowledge business, I guess we could call it, that he was looking for a car, and he was concerned about getting a non-all-wheel drive car, and therefore should he be looking at only all-wheel drive cars. And he'd mentioned Toyota as a brand that he was very interested in. And it got me right onto the Corolla. He mentioned the Corolla, and he said, it's only front-wheel drive. And I said, you don't need to worry about a front-wheel drive car versus an all-wheel drive car unless you have a very steep driveway, which you have to go in and out in stormy, potential storm conditions where your driveway would not be adequately plowed and sanded. I said, front-wheel drive with all-weather tires or even the snow versions of winter tires will get you 99% of the roads that you would travel in that car. And I said, go try the Corolla Hybrid and try to buy it if you want it, because you will get extraordinary mileage. Even though the Corolla Hybrid without a hybrid gets very good mileage, you'll probably get extraordinary mileage per gallon with the anyways, the short is he went and bought it and he's absolutely thrilled with it.
All right, but the reason
and
that I'm mentioning
so you saw
it,
the ad.
The reason I'm mentioning it is because we have sat here on the show and basically said, oh, hybrids yawn.
Well, they yawn because nobody's trying to promote them at the dealership level, because the salespeople, the dealers aren't carrying an inventory of hybrid vehicles because they are higher priced. And as I have learned, as I've sort of known but didn't really want to realize it, there's no emotion in car salesmen and car dealerships about selling vehicles that are really emotionally interesting or that are worth being emotionally interested in. I am a perfect example of that. I am really into my Jeep Cherokees, as listeners of this show might have heard, and I think it's a fabulous SUV.
But you're that's great, but you
but
are emotionally.
But the salesperson doesn't give a damn when I go in and say to him or her, you know, this dealership should be selling this particular version of this Cherokee.
Yeah, no one cares.
Because it's got everything you need, and plus it's exceptional over the regular versions, and they don't care.
And one of the reasons that this might be is because, no surprise to anyone who has a few working brain cells left trudging around, there's sudden, and I don't know if this is just lip service to the condition that people are underwater on their car loans. Now, this has been going on since,
we have been talking about it ad infinitum periodically in this show. You sent me the headline which says, car loans are dragging Americans underwater. And anybody who wants to listen to this segment of the show is going to realize, will hear once again my admonition for the need to have car loans drag out in your lifetime, in your lives, users, buyers, over 4 years. But because of the cost of new cars, or even less than new cars, going upward to areas where people who would like to buy these cars can't really afford them, with the high monthly payments that acquisition costs are 3 years and 4 years. You know, you divide 36 months or 48 months into the cost of a car before you add interest to it, and you see what the car payments are. And there's no way many people can go buy a car with a 3 or 4 year loan.
You can't spend $800, $900 a month on a car.
Correct.
So therefore, they have, you know, in a feat of marketing,
so they've gone up to 8 years,
right.
7 years, 6 years. And by the time you've hit the fourth year, as this article implies, the cars are worth less than the amount of money you've got to still pay to pay off the loan.
Right.
And so if you and then by which time, if you're out of warranty because you've put more than miles on it than the warranty gives you, cars start costing you money, you decide that the best solution is to go buy a new car so that you don't get a car that doesn't break down every several months and costs you $1,000 or $500 to get the repair done. And but you can't, so you go trade that car that you've got 4 years worth of loans cost left, and they add that to the new loan, and you're going deeper underwater.
And this happened in real estate.
And it happened sure did.
And it happened in student loans, and it's just something that if you're not
part of the American economic system designed to get you to be able to enable people to buy cars that they otherwise shouldn't buy beyond their financial means. And once you're into it, short of the car being repossessed and it's like bankruptcy in a house loan and foreclosure situation, you're going to be always making payments.
And does leasing ameliorate that?
Leasing does ameliorate it by a significant amount in terms of the monthly payments. The situation about leasing is by the time you get to the end of the lease, you're carless unless you go into a new lease. So, but at least you're paying lease rates for the car monthly as opposed to financing rates, and you're getting a new car every 3 years, and you can change your model and vehicle that you get because your lease is up. The only area where you have to worry about the lease costs, the payments, and or the end of the lease payment surcharges that might be added on is the number of miles that you paid for when you started the lease and the number of miles you have on the vehicle at the end of the lease. And whether or not you stayed within the bounds of what you leased in the beginning or whether you've exceeded those bounds and you've got whatever the cents per mile over the mileage you've bought in the lease is. And, you know, under 5,000 miles is probably not a lot of money. But at 25 cents a mile, it's one quarter of that. You add to do the math, and you got to pay $1,250.
It's a chunk that you weren't necessarily.
But it's a lot cheaper than paying $800, $900, $700 a month for
the rest of your life.
For the rest of your life, exactly. So, with that in mind, we can shift over into certified program buying because another headline. You know, it's amazing what people are alleged not to know about the automotive business, and I will admit there's a lot many people don't know about the automotive business, which is some of the reason we're on the air if anybody's listening. But one of the other headlines that came out, along with your headline of, what was it, car loans are dragging Americans underwater.
Another no kidding
awareness of certified programs is lacking.
No kidding.
And we've talked about certified programs, and it's a great alternative way to buy a basically almost new car that you might like to own for thousands less than buying the same level of options that this car may have on it. And you get an extended warranty, usually going up to around 100,000 miles. So you do want to watch what the miles are at when you're going to look at CPO cars, certified pre-owned cars, because the fewer miles that you get that car at, the more miles you have theoretically to drive before the warranty runs out, except for the one Achilles heel of these certified pre-owned programs, and that is the term of the loans extends not much more than 3 years beyond the time you buy it. And if you get a pre-owned car with 30,000 miles on it and you've got 70,000 miles left, you may not drive those 70,000 miles by the time the term part of the certified lease, warranty program comes to an end. And
can you get an aftermarket warranty?
Absolutely. They are. We've discussed those. I am very leery of it, but I bought a used car. I bought a lifetime warranty on my 15 Jeep Cherokee. Lifetime means I'm good to the year 99.99 and good for till 999,999 miles or whatever they want to give me on that, or what they've said. And all it is a $100 deductible for anything that breaks down in the car that was originally under warranty and might break down after the warranty's run out. And the warranty has run out on my Jeep. I have 70,000 miles on the 15 Jeep Cherokee now. And so my lifetime warranty has kicked in to benefit me should something major go wrong. The only part of that warranty that hasn't run out is the powertrain warranty, which is 6 years, 100,000 miles, and I have yet to reach 100,000 miles or 6 years ownership of the Jeep. But anything else that goes wrong, power windows break down, the radio breaks down, and you got to get a new radio head, the limits of my costs on those types of warranty claims or repairs are $100 per visit.
And something that you have mentioned numerous times before, but should probably mention again, and that is if it is, for example, 6 years, 100,000 miles, it's whichever comes first, correct?
That's correct. That's why I was saying that the term may end before the mileage ends.
But
the other thing you can, if you're really savvy about these certified pre-owned programs, is you need to know when that car that you're looking at was first put into service. Because you could be looking at let's say a three-year-old, we're going to 2019, we'll go back to 2016. You could be looking at 2016 cars that are under CPO programs that they came off a three-year lease, for example. It's possible that 2016 car went into service in the year 2015.
Entirely.
And if that's the case, 6 years, the CPO programs, which add usually are running 6 years, 100,000 miles, they started at the time that 2016 model was put into service as a 2016 lease or purchase. And if it was done since these new cars come out, the 20s are out and we're not at 2020 yet, okay? It could be a September 2015 purchase or lease on that car. So your 6 years would run out in 2021, the time of it, instead of 2022.
And is that something you can discuss with whoever you're buying it from or no?
No. Well, the car, somebody knows when that car went into
right.
Yes, you can discuss that. You could ask your salesperson, I want to know when this car I'm interested in was first put into service. It's a 2016. It's got 30,000 miles on it or 37,000 miles on it or whatever. I want to know when it went in. If it went in December of 2016, you got to December 2022. If it went in December or November of 2015, you've got to 2021. And you've got 70,000 miles maybe on that car, that's a year's difference, could be 12,000 miles of added warrantyable coverage.
Right.
If you were a year later when it went into service in its model year. So those are the little things that many people will never know to ask
ever.
When they go talk to a salesperson.
Right.
And it might or might not make any difference. But with vehicles like Audis and BMWs and Mercedes, I would be sure to know when my car, my CPO, Mercedes, Audi, or BMW went into service, because I can tell you those cars they eat money like crazy when the warranties are no longer valid on those cars. And we've talked about that off and on. And anyways, so much for that. So there's a lot that the consumer doesn't know about lots of things, from, you know, financing putting an eight-year loan on a car and what's going to happen to them when they're dissatisfied 4 years into it and find out that they really can't afford to get another new car and out of their unpaid off 8-year loan. Let's go to talk about SUVs for a minute, because, you know, the SUV is a craze that, the automotive industry is fully in the middle of, and it's what everybody seems to want to buy, and it's making manufacturers stop sedan production and therefore sedan sales, at least in the domestic automakers, as far as they're concerned, whereas Kia, Hyundai, Toyota, Nissan, and others outside this country's original manufacturers are continuing to promote their sedans and keep them in place, because there was a headline last week, which we never got to in last week's show, which said, you know, there's an answer for everything. Many people are starting to move to sedans because they don't want to buy what their parents are buying. So, you know, the parents are all apparently buying SUVs, and the kids don't want to look like their parents, so they maybe they're transcending.
No, they want
back
muscle
to,
cars.
Well, they want muscle cars, but they're transcending back maybe into sedans, and they mentioned the Hispanic population being maybe that population of buyers or car users that might be doing that, as opposed to other sectors of our population.
Let's just say
it doesn't matter. But I have said that the American manufacturers have a very short attention span with respect to problematic sales situations going on within their populations of cars, and their easiest way out is to stop making them because they're not profitable. I counter that by saying, if you've paid off the engineering and the development costs of the latest Fusion and the latest Chevrolet Impala or something like that, and they're still very much relevant, it's BS that they're losing money on every car they're making because they're only selling 30 or 40,000 cars of that particular brand. And why keep it in production if they can't, if the sales don't look like they're going to go up anytime soon? Well, they're certainly just giving sales away to those manufacturers who are going to keep sedans into production. And, you know, I happen to have a sedan, and I happen to love it. I am not changing it anytime soon, so I'm not a candidate for a continuation of sedan making, at least at the moment, but because I'm very happy with the particular model I have. So I am not a car maker's dream potential buyer, and I will probably have my edition of the Sonata Hybrid on the road, and I didn't put a lifetime warranty on it, but for years to come, because I don't like the new Sonata Hybrids. The Fusion would have been my alternative, because the Fusion's actually somewhat more efficient, or have been more efficient of late, in the miles per gallon aspect of their benefits. But
is
I don't
the ride the same, the driving?
Well, I have actually driven it. Yes, it's essentially the same. There are slight differences in the rides, and you can tell them if you drive different cars long enough. So you can feel the cars on the same roads if you drive the same roads. But nothing significant to make me want to have a Fusion, because it drives significantly better than my Hyundai, or vice versa.
I
really do pay attention to what my cars look like and what I like, even if I can't see it when I'm behind the driver's wheel, you know, behind the steering wheel. But I can tell the old Sonata Hybrid a mile down the road if I can see that far, whereas I cannot tell the current Sonata Hybrid apart from its non-hybrid counterparts. And I just don't happen to be interested in wanting to own it just because the newest one, just because I happen to like my old one as much as I do.
Yes, there's a real design dearth going on.
That's me.
But that will change.
And that'll change too, because actually I'm waiting for the 2020 Sonata. So actually the Sonata has redesigned their Sonata line. When I say Hyundai has redesigned its Sonata line for 2020, and they have definitely improved on the basic Sonata line look. It's actually quite attractive. Whether or not the hybrid variant of the Sonata lineup will have a significantly different exterior facade that like my current 2013 one has, as yet to be seen. But I do say I do like the new Sonata sedan design. I think it's going to be very successful as far as sedan designs go. And Hyundai is certainly, their reputation for reliable vehicles is right up there with Toyota and Honda and Nissan. And their sales of sedans may escalate, even as sedan sales in our domestics are evaporating, mostly now due to production stoppages. I don't know whether there's going to be a 2020 Fusion or not, but the Taurus is disappearing the Chevrolet for 2020, and other versions of sedans on the American lines are en route to disappearing if they're not disappearing.
Are these temporary disappearances?
Well, we don't know. You know, the Ford Fusion is a very big vehicle that is in the AV, the autonomous vehicle lineup of cars running around California and other states, and they may keep that line going. The Taurus will disappear, and I don't think it's going to be resurrected unless it stays there for the police forces of the world, but I don't see a lot of the police forces of the world liking it as much as they like the
Crown Vic.
No, well, the Crown Vic's long gone, so they can't get a Crown Vic. But they don't like it as much as they like the Explorer line, which is the SUV line. Sits higher. It's got more room for these police who are wearing these incredible utility belts with so much stuff on it. I would hate to try and see one try to run down a well fit person, but. When you can get into and out of an Explorer much more easily than you can get into and out of a Taurus, unless you're a smaller version of many of the police forces people that I've seen around. But so much for that. Now let's go to the Q&A sector of this program, which I suggest we might get into. And I would like to say, for the last few minutes, I'd like to go to a couple of questions. And give my opinion of a few things, if I could find it. I had it when I started, but here we go. After I paid for my repair and drove away, I noticed I still had the problem. How do I know the repair I asked for was really ever done? Should I demand a test drive before I pay for a repair? This is a loaded question because it depends on how much you know about your car's problem when you brought it in, and how much you will know about it when you drive it out. I'm going to vary this question and say and add to it. Should I pay attention to the condition of my car when I drove it in for the repair and the condition of my car when I drive away after the repair has been done? And the condition that I'm referring to may not have to do with the repair itself. It may have to do with something that happened to me and I caught it, and as a result, the dealer had to fix it. But had I driven off the real estate premises and come back a half an hour later and said, I noticed that I've got a little paint problem here, they could deny that it happened on their premises and say, well, nothing happened as far as we know. It wasn't that way when we gave it back to you, blah, blah, blah. If you have a car that you really value, and you're really concerned about making sure it's pristine when you pick it up as it was when you left it, you need to do what they tell you, what they allegedly do in rental companies, which is they go around the car with a schematic sheet and they check off the damage that's on the car before you drive it off the lot so they know that the car that they're giving you already had something else done to it. And you know also that they know. So if you bring the car back and they go and check the exterior, they can't come back after you for a body repair or a paint repair or whatever.
So is that something you should do at the beginning of your...
Yeah, but I went back. It happened to my Jeep Cherokee. We reported on the show. And the dealer fixed it, and it looked as good as new. And the amazing thing was I don't think it cost anywhere near as much as I would have been quoted had I taken it to a body shop to have the same thing done. So it's amazing what dealers know about repairing dents and dings versus what the body shops try to ding you for when you go in and get an estimate for it.
Sure, it's rather like healthcare. Go on.
But the fact of the matter is that the last time I went for my Jeep service, I forgot to check my Jeep on the outside to see what it was. I picked it up and I went around and looked, and I happened to know what was already present on the car, and I didn't see anything new. But to those who want to be anally compulsive about knowing what the outside condition of their car is when they pick it up, they should go around and look at it so that they know what happens when they come back, and if they see something, they can claim it before they drive off the lot, but don't come back afterwards and try to get restitution, because you probably will not succeed in doing so.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.